From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. Years ago, 37 people were injured at a public fireworks show in northern Iowa. Most suffered only minor injuries, but the accident underscored the risks associated with pyrotechnics. While fireworks can be fun and even beautiful, emergency room officials complain they often result in severe burns and lost fingers if handled improperly. Today on The Exchange, we'll discuss fireworks with a professional technician, trauma coordinator, and city fire marshal. We'll also take your calls. What are your fondest memories of fireworks as a kid? Were they harmless fun, or did you burn off your eyebrows? Join the discussion next on The Exchange. But first, the news. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. This weekend, thousands of Iowans will load up their lawn chairs and coolers and head out for a community-sponsored fireworks display. Our first guest this morning is a professional fireworks display operator for J&M Displays, one of the largest suppliers of fireworks in the Midwest, Monty Whitlock. Monty, thanks so much for being on the program this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having us.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about what your company does. So many of us have spent our youth and even our adult lives attending these displays, but we know very little about them, that who produces them. We know that the city often sponsors them. How does it work?
Well, your sponsor, of course, can be a city or it can be a civic group, community organizers, anything like that. We even have popularity among private parties, weddings, things like that. It is growing very rapidly now in the area.
So it isn't just what I remember as a kid, which is you went down to, the big hill and in the town and watched the display. People are using these for the arts festival or for even private engagements.
Absolutely. Most of the festivals around, for example, organizations like Lisbon Sauerkraut Days or most of the small towns have festivals. And fireworks being a universally attractive entertainment, most of the festivals now are employing fireworks as perhaps their closing act, just like a rock concert or anything else.
And you talked about it being, something that people enjoy and being sort of an entertainment. Is it an affordable entertainment? Is that why they come to you? Because this is something a community can afford to do? You get big bang for your buck, so to speak?
Well, fireworks truly are one of those things that you get what you pay for. Many of the upfront expenses really hurt a lot of the budgets, because you have to insure the display. You have to pay the people that shoot the display and equipment and things like that. So upfront expenses are pretty tough. But after that, then the more you're able to spend on fireworks, of course, obviously, the better your show is going to be.
And when you say that, if a community, and I grew up in Ames, puts on a display every year, does the community own the equipment, or do they hire a company like you, and you own the equipment, you bring it in? How does that work?
Well, we can do it two of three ways, actually. We can be commissioned to come in and do the whole show for a certain price, and we bring in all the people, all the equipment, and all the pyro and do everything, tear down and clean up and leave. Or we have a lot of customers and communities that have their own equipment, and they just simply buy the fireworks from us, and we deliver it to them, and they fire their own show.
Now, in that kind of case, talk to me about your training, and then are the people that are doing those displays where they've just purchased the fireworks from you, are they trained?
Most of the places that we do that, what we call a ship show or a drop show, we provide training for anybody that wants it, and most of our customers have gone through our localized training, which is based on an international training. So, we try not to, and because of insurance and regulation, you just can't buy them and go shoot them,
Is it mandatory, though? Do they have to do it?
Most places it is.
Okay. And you've got some sort of training then, probably beyond what they do.
Yeah. I probably started doing things that I shouldn't have been doing over 50 years ago.
I mean, did you have a fascination with this even as a kid?
Absolutely. big bangs and shiny objects, you know. It seems to be the way it is with pyros. But as we came up through the years, you know, of course, there's been more and more regulation. A lot of the rules and regulations were written by old-timers. I had quite a bit of involvement in writing the Pyrotechnic Guild International rules and regulations. And then the federal government, of course, and the CPSC and these kind of people get involved, and every year there's more and more regulation. And it actually is getting harder and harder to do shows just based on regulation.
And so are we over-regulated, or is that because, you know, there have been accidents, and even, you know, obviously we typically hear of these accidents of some kids shooting off fireworks or dad kind of things went haywire. But sometimes even at large professional shows, accidents happen. I mean, so are we, do we have the right amount of regulation in your opinion?
In some areas we are over-regulated, and in some areas it's probably, I guess, if you're going to have regulation, about right. The thing to remember is you can, you know, you can stack regulations to the ceiling, but like you said, accidents still happen. And a lot of this product is imported from the Orient, where it is handmade by individuals, and of course, not everything is absolutely perfect all the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about you? You've been doing this for how long?
I've been doing it professionally for close to 30 years, mm-hmm. and messing around prior to that for 20. Over 50 years I've been involved with pyro.
Got all your fingers?
I got every one of my digits.
But in that course of history, a long time enjoying fireworks, have you seen accidents? Have you had a close call where you went, whoa, or have you been very lucky to have a very safe history?
My shoot team has never been involved in a personal injury accident, and we're very proud of that, and we knock on wood when we say that. But I have been close a couple of times. I always joke and say I've been blown up, blown over, and blown down, but never hurt.
Well, that's a good record then. You know, as you mentioned, this is sort of a fascination that started with you as a young boy, and obviously that there are other young kids out there who have an interest. How does one get into this profession? You know, what do you tell someone who says, you know, I want to do what you do?
Well, when somebody comes to me, approaches me about it, and all of your lead pyrotechnicians probably have a different attitude toward it. But when somebody comes to me about it, I talk to them for a while. And if you talk to them, you can tell, you know, if they're just, you know, a little bit crazy or if they're serious about becoming a pyro. And I always tell them, well, think about it. I tell them right up front, well, you know, it's show business. So when everybody else is partying, you're going to be working. You never have a holiday off. You never have a weekend off. And your time is not your own. And if you're married, unless your wife's working with you, she's probably going to be mad at you all the time. Now come back in a year, and we'll talk about it again.
So you sort of discourage them, actually.
I actually discourage them about it, paint the picture pretty bleak. And then if they come back, then I know, they're pretty much serious. And then we talk about getting educated and working as an apprentice and working their way up. You know, I make them work without pay the first year and do all the heavy work, digging the holes, bucking steel and racks. And if they keep coming back, then you know you got somebody there that is really interested and is serious about it. And then you really bring them onto a team.
All right. I'm speaking with Monty Whitlock, fireworks display operator for J&M Displays, and we're going to talk to him a little bit later as well about what you just talked about, Monty, which is digging the hole, putting the stuff in the ground, setting up the display. We're going to talk about some of the nuts and bolts of it, but I want to bring on Karen Jones, a trauma coordinator for Iowa Health of Des Moines, and Brandy Thompson, a coordinator for Safe Kids of Greater Des Moines, which is a part of Blank Children's Hospital, because not everyone is content to watch those public displays. And like Monty, they might have started as a kid fascinated with fireworks. For some, it's harmless fun. Others, you can really see some serious injuries. Karen, let me begin with you as a trauma coordinator and I believe ER nurse, is that right? ER doctor?
No, I'm a nurse. I'm also a life flight nurse.
So. Not life flight nurse. Okay.
Correct.
Well, what have you seen then over the years?
You know, the majority of the injuries that we see are burns from the fireworks, and then there's also injuries to the hands that are blast injuries, sometimes to the face if they explode at close range. But the majority of the injuries that we see are either burns or hand injuries that involve partial amputations of fingers.
And when do they start? I mean, we're about a week out from the day off we get for the 4th of July, but you start seeing them now. Is it all summer long? Is it right around the holiday?
Typically, it's between about the middle of June to about the middle of July. People start a little early. They want to have fun before the 4th, and then sometimes people still have things afterwards. So the most that you would see is usually between the middle of June to the middle of July.
And what's the average age of a victim? Is there an average age?
You know, when you look at the statistics, first of all, the highest statistic is in males. And it's also in people, the ones that we see the most injuries from are 20 years old and younger. A lot of children, about a third of the injuries from sparklers and burns are to children. A lot of them under 5 because they're not coordinated enough to hold sparklers. What people don't really realize is that even though sparklers are great to look at, they will come to a temperature of 1,200 degrees, which is very high Fahrenheit, and that will cause burns very quickly. It can cause third-degree burns.
When you mentioned something that I thought was interesting, because most fireworks are illegal in Iowa, mm-hmm. The firecrackers, the torpedoes, skyrockets, things like this, and sparklers and snakes are legal, you mm-hmm. sometimes wonder if unintentionally it gives the people the perception that those products then are safe because the others are illegal. They must be unsafe. But these two, sparklers rather, and snakes are legal, so those are okay for my kids.
I agree with you. I think that is what people think, and they just don't realize, like I said, how hot they can be. You know, as a parent, my advice would be if you're going to use sparklers, most of the time they recommend that children under 12 don't handle sparklers because they're just not, adept enough at holding them and making sure they don't get burned and put them down quickly enough. The other thing is they'll pick them up after they've been released and they're done and they're still hot. So you definitely need to have a place to put the sparklers once you're done with them, put them in water, have a bucket to put them in so that children don't pick them back up.
You mentioned burns. You mentioned sometimes hand injuries. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned these are typically young people. So this isn't a matter of there's, alcohol involved or, the party got a little wild and they stopped being safe. Sometimes it's just a lack of maybe caution if they're young, or is there alcohol involved sometimes?
Well, in the young people, there's fortunately not usually a lot of alcohol involved. In the adult population, a lot of times there are drugs and alcohol involved, and it's because they, have a decreased sense of ability to know when to move quickly, or they can't move quickly, and so they're not being as responsible as they probably would be if they didn't have other substances involved. But we do, in the adult population, see a lot of alcohol-related injuries.
We're talking about fireworks on The Exchange today on Iowa Public Radio. We want to hear from you. Do you play with fireworks? Do you let your kid play with fireworks, sparklers, snakes? Have you been injured in the course of your lifetime from a firework? 1-866-780-9100. Email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org or Twitter us at IPR Talk. This is Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck, sitting in for Ben Kiefer. We'd like you to join our conversation about fireworks this afternoon at 1-866-780-9100. Harmless fun or dangerous toys that kids should avoid. What is your experience with fireworks, Ben? You can call us at that number, 866-780-9100. You can email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org or Twitter us at IPR Talk. We're speaking with Karen Jones, a trauma coordinator for Iowa Health of Des Moines, and also Brandy Thompson, coordinator of Safe Kids of Greater Des Moines, a part of Blank Children's Hospital. Brandy, Karen before the break was talking about some of the injuries she has seen as a LifeLight nurse over the course of the years. How do you then counter this? What do you do to say to families and parents, let's use some caution here?
Yeah, unfortunately, Karen has to deal with the consequences after. What we try to do is get ahead of that whole situation, preventing any of them from ever reaching Karen, by partnering with media outlets such as this to provide them with safety information regarding fireworks.
And so she mentioned no sprinklers may be under the age of 5. Is that something you got, or do you have different, what are your sort of rules of thumb?
Nope, she was right on track. There's no doubt about that. And I think one of the things that is happening is that there's the "this won't happen to me or my child" mentality. And I'm so glad that she referenced sparklers, because they do burn at an extremely high temperature. And it's actually hot enough to melt gold. And I think that, like you were talking about, they are legal. They can be bought at your grocery store, just about anywhere, the gas station. And so you would think, well, gosh, if these are on the market, then they're okay and they'll be safe for my child. But it's just certainly not the case. You know, bottle rockets, those can tend to be available as well, not having any control over their flight pattern or their ultimate destination. You know, when they land, are they going to land in dry leaves or a crowd of people, those types of things.
Well, and Brandy, I think it's sort of interesting, depending on where you grew up. I grew up in Iowa, so I kind of grew up with this feeling that fireworks were unsafe because they were illegal. I just assumed then as a kid, well, they were kind of scary and dangerous, and I didn't really have much interest. On the flip side, I know that Karen mentioned it tends to be more boys that come in. My brother being one of those who blew off his eyebrows. You know what I mean? This is just how it – but when I've traveled to Missouri as an adult, I've noticed, you know, obviously they're for sale. And not only just for sale, but the public perception is not one of fear, not one of danger, because they're not illegal. So is there a balance between a safe play and – or should it just, in your opinion, not be a toy?
I would really like to see consistent messaging, and from a safety perspective and being an injury prevention professional, obviously I feel that the efforts that are trying to be done here in Iowa with the message of them being illegal is the right one, so to speak, over maybe Missouri and their perceptions. And of course, you know, we are always going to have those people that are going to cross the border, buy them, and come back to Iowa and have their displays in the backyard. And so I think that, you know, those are creating then their own issues, and I think that there's some important messaging within that for people who, despite them being illegal, should be aware of things such as not trying to relight a dud, as we all know them to be called. If you're lighting the fuse and it's not reacting as it was supposed to not try to relight that firework, not carrying them in our pockets. It's an easy place for firecrackers and small things to fit, but in the event that something tragic would happen, the entire pocket could be ignited. And then not to modify the fireworks in any type of way either, and they truly need to be used according to their manufacturer's guidelines.
Karen, you mentioned that the sort of window of injuries tends to be mid-June to mid-July. You've seen any yet then? Because we're, you know, right upon this 4th of July holiday.
You know, I haven't seen any yet at this point. As a level one trauma center, we do see a lot of injuries that are very critical, but we've been fortunate so far this weekend. We didn't see any, but I anticipate that we will as the week progresses and the weekend comes to us.
When this happens, are the parents typically aware the child has had them? Have they supplied them to the child, or is it something they've gotten on their own?
You know, it really varies. The injuries that we see from children most of the time, you know, like Brandy said, you know, they're legal, so parents buy sparklers, don't think anything of it. The other adults that we see, you know, young people that we see a lot of times, they're out doing things that their parents aren't aware of.
All right. And so sometimes they're surprised and probably horrified to,
absolutely,
know.
Right.
But I've read articles where sometimes this is with mom and dad, you know, they're shooting them off and then there's an accident. So sometimes kids are harmed or accidentally, obviously, but by their own parents' hands in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. When the bottle rockets are a good example of, you never know, are they actually going to go straight up? Something may happen that they'll tip and then everything will go flying and the child is just standing there even a distance away and can still get injured, as can adults. It doesn't have to be a child. Anybody can be injured that way. As Brandy mentioned, the other thing is that oftentimes people will look and they'll think they're a dud, and maybe a child will go to try to relight it or yet another adult, and then it'll explode.
And so, like Brandy, are you on the line of not at all, or do you think there can be some safe fun with these?
You know, I have to say I tend to go more conservative, and with Brandy I would say leave it to the professionals. They put on some excellent firework displays throughout the city and in the suburbs, and I think that's where you should be.
All right. I want to talk to Jordan in Iowa City. Jordan, thanks so much for calling The Exchange. You had fun with fireworks as a kid.
Yeah, sure. I, you know, as long as discretion is used and there's proper supervision, I feel that it's completely okay for fireworks to be used outside of a professional setting. I mean, I maybe had close calls when I was a kid because, you know, my parents weren't around sometimes when I was messing with fireworks with my older brother, maybe, or something like that. But really, you know, as long as they're put in the proper hands and the parents are around, I don't see a problem with that at all. I had a lot of fun as a child, so.
And what kind of grade are you talking about? I mean, is that part of the issue, though, Jordan? Did you know which products were safe for you to use, or, you know, or did you have limits on what you were allowed to have as a kid?
Not necessarily. I mean, being from Iowa, growing up, I've only ever experienced, you know, in terms of legality, I've only ever been able to buy, at least in the state, sparklers and snakes, but, we always would go outside of the state to buy anything else, and we weren't really placed, we didn't really have a lot of limits placed on us as kids in terms of what we could have. But for some of the more dangerous ones, or really for anything besides sparklers and snakes, we would need parental supervision, and I think that's where the issue lies. Is are there responsible adults around? Do they know how to operate the fireworks? That type of thing. So,
all right. So it was for you. It's supervision equals safety. That's the key.
Right. Yeah.
Jordan, thanks so much for your call today. Really, really appreciate it. I'm going to try real hard to squeeze in James from Iowa City. James, we don't have a lot of time left on the program. What do you think about fireworks?
Well, I'd have to agree with Jordan. I think that the question is not just supervision, but also education. I mean, there's a lot of dangerous things in the world. So I'm wondering, I was thinking about, is there like the middle-of-the-road answer where permitting of public-use-grade fireworks would be allowable and some sort of training given to those who would have a permit to do it in their home or in a private setting versus the public displays, just trying to find a win-win for both parties.
All right, James, when we come back, I've got the perfect guy to answer your question. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by the fire marshal for the city of Clive, Tony Collins, and he can help address that question. But I also just want to give a few seconds left. Karen, right as we head into the weekend, one last piece of advice for parents.
I think they need to know where their children are. If they're going to have sparklers, make sure that they have a place to put them out in a bucket of water or something so that they can't be picked up again. I just think the public displays are the way to go.
Brandy, last word.
I would have to agree with Karen. I would just like to encourage people to leave the fireworks to the professionals. It truly is the safest way to enjoy them.
All right. Thank you both for being part of the program today. I really appreciate it. When we come back from the break, we'll bring back Monty Whitlock, fireworks display operator for J&M Displays. We'll invite the fire marshal from Clive on the program, and we'll return to some of your calls. Again, if you want to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. That number, 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us at The Exchange at Iowa Public Radio. Send us a tweet at IPR Talk. I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. Today, we're discussing fireworks. Right before the break, you heard from two safety advocates who really believe that it should be left to the professionals, that fireworks should not be handled by kids and parents. On other hand, we've had callers say, hey, I grew up playing with fireworks and I'm fine. I've got a tweet today says, it seemed like every year for a number of years I got burned on spent sparklers, danger and fun. It's a mixture of both. I want to invite to the conversation Tony Collins, fire marshal for the city of Clive. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Janine.
So what's the balance? Can we have fireworks and fun, or should, you know, the average Joe leave them alone and go to their city display?
Well, we would like to see the average Joe go to their city display whenever and if at all possible. Leave it up to the professionals. They're designed for enjoyment and entertainment. We understand that. But when you break it down, bottom line, they're a dangerous object. They're filled with exploding powders. They're an ignition source. I mean, they're just flat out dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Now, you heard Jordan say he grew up with them. He had fun. And then you heard James say, well, what about some sort of permit process? Would there be a way in which individuals could go get some training? And then, you know, if they wanted to have a little display on their farm or in their backyard, they'd be permitted to do so.
Well, it'd be nice to be able to educate everybody and everything, and we wouldn't have a lot of the laws in place and regulations that we have. That's why people specialize in different areas, because they hone in on a specific subject or topic that they're good at. We do our best in public education, which we're hopefully doing today as well. But it's about education and being able to comprehend. Just going to the training, you have to apply it. You have to have experience. You need to understand truly the animal you're dealing with. And you're dealing with explosives is what you're dealing with. So a permitting process, it's not up to me to decide who can and can't. But it would be difficult, comprehensively speaking, for the public to be able to, you know, shoot them all safely, every display that was attempted.
Monty Whitlock is the fireworks display operator for J&M Displays. Monty, you suggested that when communities have their own equipment, you often provide training. But did you have to get some sort of certification or permit yourself? And what did that process look like?
Well, of course, like I said, I started so many years ago, there really wasn't anything like that in place. But as time went by, and regulation came into place, yes, we do retrain every year. That includes classes and hands-on training or apprenticeship-type training, if you would, and then experience in at least 3 to 6 shows. And then when you're ready to go professional, you have to have a federal background check by the federal government. You're subject to drug and alcohol testing. And in order to transport stuff, you have to have a commercial driver's license and be tested with a hazmat driver endorsement. So it's quite regulated, and it's a lot better than it used to be when any wildcat could go out of state, load up his truck or his car, and we call it bootlegging. That's just exactly what it is. And there's still a substantial amount of that going on now. I mean, we try every time we can to prevent that, because these guys, you know, they're not trained. They break the NFPA regulations, they break the local regulations and the state regulations, and when something happens, they're gone, and there you go.
Mm-hmm. I want to bring on Marcy from Shellsburg, former Iowa technician. Marcy, has training improved since you were in this business? Are you still in the business?
I'm kind of an amateur. I know Monty, and I've had the privilege of going through some of the classes that the International Pyrotechnics Guild offers, and they are just true professionals. They do an outstanding job.
What do you want people to know? I mean, why did you get into this?
Well, it's kind of, as Monty says, you're kind of born with that lust of fireworks. I think I experienced my first fireworks with my father when I was 3. My grandmother was convinced that he was going to blow me up, but we're all still here, and we all still enjoy our pyrotechnics show, and I must say the 4th of July is my very favorite holiday.
When you say your show, do you put on a show and yourselves? Do you have to have a permit to do that?
You do have to get training, and it depends on what locality that you're in. I was most recently in Amana, and it was, you know, an unincorporated township. It was a pretty simple process. But I'm thinking that most major municipalities, you would have some kind of permit. Isn't that right, Monty?
Correct.
All right. And Tony Collins, a fire chief of Clive, you're on the scene, I suppose, on some of these displays. Is that right? On a big fireworks community display? It seems like fire marshal or firefighters are at least by to make sure that
that's
nothing
correct.
Goes
we
awry.
Have apparatus with personnel standing by. It's required. The Clive Festival, for example, they do a professional shoot. I believe J&M does that as well, and they do a great job. But that's one of our local requirements. We require standby fire apparatus and personnel.
You gave me a little bit earlier to look through one of J&M Display's catalogs. Talks about different kind of packages that communities can buy from $200 up to, I'm sure thousands of dollars. And you showed me a picture, though, of some of these displays, or excuse me, the fireworks themselves. They're like big bags of, they look like sandbags almost. We're not talking about something I can hold in my hand. It's not a bottle rocket. This is, a 3-foot-long bag of what?
Yeah, explosives.
I don't want to light that.
Yeah. And just that picture alone, and Monty can attest as well, looking at that photo of the display, the aerial shells. I mean, there's some big mortar shells mm-hmm. there. They're explosives. So that explains a lot of the regulations. You need to know what you're doing. That's a package deal of explosives.
So, Monty,
yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. You talk about size and stuff. Various sizes and stuff. We have shells and mortars that go up to 16 inches in diameter. Now, you think about that. That is as big as the guns on the Iowa-class battleships.
Exactly.
So you don't want amateurs messing with kind of stuff like that.
So how long does it take you then to prepare for a show? I mean, when do you set up?
Well, it depends on the size of the show. I'd say the average small town or celebration show, we might arrive, say, like 6 o'clock in the evening, start setting mortars, racks, and breaking the shells and stuff. A larger show, like a municipal show, for example, I do the Iowa City 4th of July show, we'll start racking that up and setting it and getting the equipment placed on July 3rd. And then,
what's your favorite? What's your kind of, what's the, because we all sit there and we go ooh and on. We love it at the end when there's rapid fire, one after the other, different colors. What's your favorite? What do you look at and still just go, yeah?
Well, my favorite is red and white magnesium with a bottom shot.
And what's that look like?
It's just, it's colored stars, red and white, and made, one of the chemicals used in the production of that star is magnesium, which burns a brilliant, brilliant color, and of course it affects both the white and the red, and of course the bottom shot is like an aerial bomb that goes off right as the stars go out.
Fantastic. Let's talk to Keon in Waterloo. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it Keon?
Yes, it is.
Thanks for calling the Exchange.
I got a comment, and then I have a question for the fireworks expert. When I was a kid, I've learned early on how valuable being able to watch firework displays are. The Waterloo JCs here, they throw fireworks displays. And I learned that lesson when we were kids. We were always given firecrackers, and I blew my hand up a couple times before I actually learned my lesson because I couldn't get rid of the firecracker. And then the final thing that happened, my niece was lighting a firecracker, and she threw the firecracker, and it went towards my other niece's face, and it blew her mouth, it blew her lips up, and
aww.
Stuff. And yeah, and that right there taught me how valuable being able to watch firework displays are, because it does need to be left to the professionals. And the question I have, and I take this answer off air, how do you guys calibrate when it's really windy outside? Does that make a difference how windy it is?
Good question, Keon, because – go ahead.
Oh, that's it. I'm going to take my answer off here.
Okay. That's a good question because also one of our earlier guests was wondering after she got off the air what you do also not only about wind, Monty, but also if you've got dry leaves, dry grass. I mean, how do you counter those things?
Well, wind is unpredictable, of course. Some of these shells will go 600-800 feet into the air. And the wind at that level is shearing and doing different things than it is at the ground level. So we prepare as best we can with our distance regulations and stuff. And then as we approach the show, we'll fire individual shots every so often to try to see what the wind is doing up there. And, of course, as far as fire hazard goes, we try to always, course, around our area, we'll have fire extinguishers, stuff like that, but we need fire protection. Usually all shows are required to have fire protection from the local fire department on site.
How many people to put on a show, and what does it look like once you've laid it out? Are these mini cannons? I mean, what are we talking about?
Well, if it's a hand-fired show, you need an individual mortar for each size shell you do. And a typical show will have from 3 to 6-inch shells hand-fired. So you
what does hand-fired mean? Meaning you're lighting it yourself?
Right. Well, it means they're being loaded by a loader and then fired by a shooter by hand using a red flare. You've seen that. And so we can reload. We'll use steel guns in that case. And then we can reload those guns over and over and over during the show. Now, if it's electronic-fired show where we fire electrically, say, to music or most large municipal shows and stuff are fired electrically, each shell is loaded in its individual mortar and then wired to an electronic device. So it can take from a few hundred to thousands of mortars to do a show.
Wow. Tony Collins, fire marshal for the city of Clive. 2 years ago in Charles City, there was a town just south of the Minnesota border here in Iowa. 37 people were injured when at a Publix fireworks display, there was a mishap. There was an accident in which it didn't go into the air, sort of skidded across the ground, is my understanding, at some of the crowd. Most people not seriously injured, but a scary accident nonetheless. Have you been at something like that when it's happened?
Yeah, I had a close experience myself when I was on Bondurant's Fire Department. We used to do the hand firing of them, and we had a shell that only went up about 10, 12 feet before it went off. And so I've been close to it and felt it. And one of the things that fire department do from a safety perspective, why we have apparatus on standby and personnel, as Monty said, that's a requirement in most places. If it's not, it should be. For fallout areas, if hot cinders come down into dry areas, we do a pre-survey of the site, not just wind conditions. I look at the terrain conditions, the fallout area that they want, if the wind's going to take it away from the designated fallout area. We may cancel the show if the conditions are too hazardous. But one of the other things we do is we check those racks. We want to feel them, make sure that they're stable. And the mortars are fired from, and Monty might know better than I do, but I think they had a rack that tipped or something. Otherwise, they're not going to go towards the audience unless they're aimed that way. But we want to make sure they're stable, that they're solid, that they're on a good, firm surface, and that doesn't happen. So we do a lot of pre-event planning, previewing of the equipment and that, and obviously permitting and certification, which insurance and qualifications, regulations by ATF, et cetera. We look at all that so that the people are doing it in the first place.
Do you guys get trained in this as part of normal firefighter training?
There is training available for code officials, fire marshals, fire prevention specialists. I went to it over in Cedar Rapids. Cedar Rapids Fire Department's a big proponent of safety and fireworks and also supports the public enjoyment of pyrotechnics and fireworks. But we want it to be done responsibly and safely. So to do that, we kind of have to have a little bit of knowledge. So I went to a week-long class and actually got to participate in setting up my own chute and learning about the electric matches and the electronic firing and synchronizing the music and that. And one of the key things, anybody in that area working, safety glasses, helmet, gloves, protective gear, high-visibility vests at nighttime so you can see them moving
around. Are those required or recommended?
They're recommended. They may be required in some areas. I know they're recommended when you're trained that way. Now, whether everybody does it, it's probably going to, like any other private vendor, it's going to vary on enforcement. So we take it from that safety beforehand as well as after the shot to make sure, little spot fires don't start. And if they do, we have somebody there to hit it right away. We keep a four-wheel drive vehicle on hand because a lot of the remote areas is where they're typically shot. You want to be able to get access to that fallout area.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. What's your experience with fireworks been? Have you had fun with them as a kid? Did you have a dangerous accident? Do you enjoy public fireworks displays? And, in fact, have you seen more of them as the years gone by, as more festivals include them? What do you allow your children to do? Do you think they're safe for kids? Do you allow your kids to use sparklers?
Yes,
sprinklers
the fire
to put
marshal
out the
strongly recommends the sprinklers.
1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. Please join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Monty, he recommended, you know, helmets, safety vests, safety goggles. You use those things?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And how big of a space do you need to set up? I mean, how long is a line of mortars? Are we talking 6 feet, 12 feet? And then how much distance do you need for the crowd to be away?
Well, that's set down by regulation. NFPA 1123, which is National Fire Protection Association, puts out a regulation that you need a radius clearance. Now, that's from the center of your gun and out in all directions of at least 70 feet per inch. And we try to even enlarge that area if we can, because the more distance you have, of course, the safer things are. Now, a lot of people, the problem we have is people try to encroach. They want to get as close as they can to that fireworks display. And when I go to a display, I want to be at least 1,000 feet away. Mm-hmm. And I tell people that the further back you are, the better the watching is, because, you know, a lot of things, you get to see the whole display. You don't have to worry about ash coming down in your eyes or whatever, and you don't have to tip your head back so much that you get a neck ache from watching it, not to mention, you know, of course, the safety aspect of it.
Tony, Monty mentioned at the beginning that we're seeing more and more people choose fireworks displays for community celebrations, even weddings or private celebrations. Is that a good thing, or does it give you pause? Do you see – I know you said that J&M does a good job and is a professional organization, but does it give you pause and concern you that some citizens might say, I can do this?
Oh, yeah, I just recently denied a request for one because they couldn't meet the qualification parameters on being able to do it.
I want to have one at my wedding, let's say, I got to come to you and get permission. If I'm hiring Monty, does he do that or do I come to you?
Well, it's a little of both. It's mm-hmm. a team effort. I've got a cue sheet I'm going to follow to make sure that whoever you're hiring to do your display meets the qualifications, that they have the ATF explosives license, the Pyrotechnic Guild's certification credentials, and then we require the display site aerial shot, the layout, the fallout area. We're going to provide fire suppression staff and apparatus. We're going to go through, you know, the entire checklist of things. Then it can be done. I've permitted some. We did it for a senior graduation open house. You know,
wow.
Lucky kid.
Yeah.
And then I've denied them as well, too. So it's case by case. Some towns, they do fundraisers to raise money so they can do a 4th of July fireworks display. Some cities struggle with funding, and so they turn to the public for help because the public wants it, and they donate. The more money they have, as Monty said, the bigger the display. If, you know, some might only have $5,000 to spend, somebody else might have $25,000 to spend, you know, depending on their attendance and history of the show or tradition. Some just keep getting bigger and better every year. Others fizzle out, if you will.
Monty, what does $5,000 buy me in a course of minutes? You know, because we usually rank displays in sort of their length, or I guess it can be long, and there can be long pauses between the fireworks, which no one likes very well. So what's an average price of a city fireworks display in Iowa?
Well, I would say that probably there are a lot of $5,000 shows. You ask the same question that everybody calls me up, you know, and they say, hey, I want to do a fireworks show. How much for a half hour or whatever, you know, and it's hard to say, you know. Mm-hmm. As a pyrotechnician, I don't want that show to last more than about 20 to 30 minutes maximum.
Why is that?
Because you don't want it to get redundant. You don't want it repetitive. Mm-hmm. You want to build the excitement and just have it build to a crescendo and wow them and then make them walk away. And, man, that's the best thing, you know. And so if they walk away thinking that show was only 5 minutes long, when in fact it was 20 or 30, you know they were having a good time.
Sure. All right. Let me ask you, Tony. It's illegal to buy most fireworks in Iowa, but people go to other states and buy them. Is it illegal to have them here? So if I'm setting them off in my backyard and your neighbor says and calls you to come tell me no, do you confiscate them or what's the rule there?
Yeah, we will seize them. The code official has the authority to seize them. If there's a complaint or we catch you firing off illegal fireworks, You can possess them, but you can't shoot them. I know it sounds kind of silly, but people travel to Missouri, South Dakota, for example, border states here that where they're legal, and they transport them back. And there's so many safety concerns just with the transportation of them. But if you're shooting them, then you've demonstrated intent. Mm-hmm. And that'll authorize the code official then to confiscate or seize them. And then what we do, if we collect those fireworks, we turn them over to the state fire marshal's office. And once or twice a year, they do a big disposal. They go out to a quarry or a safe area, and they have the bomb technicians from the fire marshal's office actually do a disposal and get rid of all those consumer fireworks that were transported in.
That's a noisy affair.
Yeah. It's a good show, too.
I bet it is. How do we get invited to that? That being said, you know, how much time do you spend doing that? Are you guys out looking for these people, or is it really if you get a call? Or?
Well, the enforcement is always on the radar screen. It's just this is the heightened time. This 4th of July, middle of summer, is the time kids are out of school, the town celebrations and festivals, and, of course, Independence Day. But that's when we have more structure fires, fireworks injuries, like Karen was talking about earlier. You know, everybody has sparklers for their kids on the 4th of July, and then you get the injuries, which are always a huge concern to us as well. But it's a heightened awareness. It's because of the season, no different than Christmas tree or safety in the wintertime at Christmas. You know, it's all relative. So there's a heightened awareness. So therefore, you start seeing them. Police are going to be stepping up enforcement a little bit because it's on their radar screen. It's in front of them.
All right. We just have a few seconds left. Any last advice?
Oh, like I've said before, nobody ever called 911 because they'd done something smart, you know. So we're in the what-if business and prevention and fire safety. So we look at everything what-if, worst-case scenario. You know, people might think we're a bad guy for taking their fireworks. We just want people to enjoy their holiday, enjoy their families, and come home with all their fingers and toes.
Tony Collins, Fire Marshal for City of Clive, thanks so much. Monty Whitlock, thank you. Fireworks Display Operator for J&M Displays, appreciate it. We're out of time. Today's program produced by Lindsay Moon. Assistance from Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, Rosalind Sixby, Dennis Reese, and John Pemble.